This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
The great Mike Tenenbaum joins us now, and then CC Sabathia at 10:30. Mike, good morning. I imagine you're doing well and hydrated, and everything is solid and good for you.
It is, and good to be with you guys. I'm looking forward to hearing what CC Sabathia has to say about all the great baseball being played as well.
Yep, we've seen some excellent baseball so far in the postseason. All right, so let me start with the injury from Dak Prescott. I mean, just gruesome, awful, brutal injury. What do you think is next? Do you think now you envision next year Dak another franchise tag? Is that the only way that this goes and moves forward for the Cowboys and Dak?
You know, I had suggested yesterday on ESPN that they should try to do a shorter-term deal, maybe a two-year deal that has some guaranteed money, some incentives, meaning they share some of the risk in terms of rehab, but to try to get a deal done as soon as the year is over. So you take the sort of economics off the table and the stress about that and let him worry about rehab and really approach this as a partner and to stand shoulder to shoulder with Dak. And then if that doesn't work out, then I think if you're Dallas, you do have to franchise him because you just can't let him leave, because even despite having this catastrophic injury, guys, so many teams need quarterbacks. Like, you can make an argument that up to a third of the league could be looking for a quarterback next year. I think somebody would assume the risk of injury.
Mike, so what are the Dallas Cowboys now? I mean, Andy Dalton's not your, you know, regular run-of-the-mill backup. I mean, the guy's, he's been a starting quarterback, had success. So what is this Dallas Cowboys team now?
I think they still have a chance to win the division, Rick. When you look at the NFC East this year, and you just say through the lens of, hey, this is an 11-game sprint, does Andy Dalton leading the Dallas Cowboys give them the best chance to win the division? I just think, you know, you could basically eliminate Washington and the Giants. So now you're saying it's going to be, you know, the Philadelphia, excuse me, or Dallas. And I think right now, given Carson Wentz's inconsistencies, Andy Dalton may give him the best chance to win the division.
Mike, I want to ask you about the quarterback situation with the other team that was on the field in AT&T Stadium on Sunday. Daniel Jones committed his 31st turnover, which resulted in a touchdown for the Dallas Cowboys. At what point do you have to question, you know, the progression of Daniel Jones and whether or not he's your franchise guy?
You know, Chris, I was thinking a lot about this. Like, I want to start with another team in the division, which is what Ron Rivera did. Ron Rivera inherited Dwayne Haskins, and he went from first to third. And what was interesting about that was 2 weeks ago we heard Ron Rivera talk about how, hey, there was growing pains with Cam Newton, and we're going to survive those. And Cam Newton is an incredible worker, always the first guy in. And I think the fact that Haskins went from first string to third string told me that there could be something there about they're not happy about his work ethic. And I think now you look at Joe Judge, and if he says, hey, ball security is really important, and you look at the fact that besides Carson Wentz, Daniel Jones has 8 turnovers, which is only surpassed by Wentz's 10, I think at some point he really has to think about benching him and saying, hey, the standards are the standards, and it applies to Daniel Jones and everybody else.
Mike, how do you bench him, though? Like, I understand in a perfect world maybe you have time, but isn't the one answer we need this year to know whether Daniel Jones is the answer or you have to draft another quarterback? If you bench him, you lose that time. I mean, you lose games of knowing if he's going to be a good quarterback or not in this league, no?
I think the one answer you need this year is, can you build a winning culture? I think that's much more important. You look at Bill Belichick in year one in New England, and he had 4 quarterbacks, and they paid Drew Bledsoe over $100 million. And a year later, it was Tom Brady, and it was all about the culture and standards. And I'm not saying you bench Daniel Jones and play Colt McCoy and feel like that gives you a better chance to win, but I think what it does, it sends a message to, importantly, Andrew Thomas and all these other young guys that they are your future. And those are the players that's really who your audience are, which is the standards are the standards. And I don't care if you're Daniel Jones, this year's first-round pick, or anybody else for that matter. The standards are the standards. And if you don't play up to it, it's not good enough, and you're going to be on the bench. And I think that's more important than anything, is Joe Judge has to say, this is what I stand for, and nothing else is acceptable.
Mike Tannenbaum joins us on the show. My only problem with that, Mike, is this. And this is why I'm always of the opinion that the GM and the coach should be tied at the hip. Like, it kind of what you see in San Francisco. Like, that's how I feel like it should be done. But, I mean, Dave Gettleman is on the hot seat. Joe, he just hired Joe Judge. If Joe Judge turns around and benches Daniel Jones, I mean, is that something that Dave Gettleman is going to allow him to do?
Well, you know, every situation I've been in for over two decades, this person has to say, that person has to say, regardless of that, Rick, the head coach has to determine play time. Because if you start getting into this committee approach, it gives you no chance to win over a long period of time. And the head coach has to say, you're playing, you're not. And the players have to look at one leader. Now, when it gets into trades and how much a player should get paid, that's a different conversation. But again, you know, you're looking at this draft class and, you know, long-term Xavier McKinney or Matt Peart, their third-round pick, you have to tell them that, look, like, you're all going to be judged fairly and consistently. And again, Daniel Jones, you have eight turnovers. Only Carson Wentz has more. I am telling you that ball security is important to me. I think it's the opposite, guys. If he doesn't bench Daniel Jones and these turnovers continue, I think Joe Judge loses credibility because they're going to say, like, well, that's BS. You're saying one thing, but you have double standards. And that's really the worst thing that could happen if I'm Joe Judge. So I think at some point he may say this is an opportunity. And again, I go back to Ron Rivera. Ron Rivera didn't make Dwayne Haskins the second-string quarterback. He made him the third, and I don't think that was by accident. So I think this is a situation that bears to be closely monitored.
Isn't that a different situation, though, Mike? And that's, I mean, that Ron Rivera and the guys they brought in didn't draft Dwayne Haskins. Dave Gettleman drafted Daniel Jones. I mean, his job is going to be – his job security is determined by how good Daniel Jones is. If all of a sudden, right, I mean, again, week seven, you decide to bench Daniel Jones, I mean, that writing's on the wall. Dave Gettleman's getting fired.
Right, but again, if I'm Joe Judge, like, look, I got a partner in Dave Gettleman, but I got to do what's best for the team. I'm the guy up in front of these guys every single day, and it's my credibility. While it's our program, like, I can't say that turning the ball over is acceptable. And the more he turns the ball over and the more you let him play, players are going to be like, hey, you know, I could be late. You know what? Like, this guy's turning the ball over. It's okay. And, you know, what are the standards here? So, again, like, I go back to Dave's point, which is like, what are they trying to accomplish? To me, it's very easy. In year one, what we're trying to accomplish is to say, Joe Judge is in charge. The standards are the standards, and that goes for player one as well as player 53.
Well, Mike, you're talking about standards, and you brought up this player's name a little bit earlier. You talked about Andrew Thomas. And in the Rams game, he allowed six pressures and two sacks. Didn't get much better against the Cowboys. Nine pressures and one sack that ended up being a scoop and score for a touchdown. At what point do you look at Andrew Thomas and say, maybe we need to give this guy some time to just take a step back, take a breath, because clearly he's a liability on that offensive line.
Yeah, and to be fair, I really liked him. I saw him personally, and I thought that was a really good pick, and hopefully over time it will be. And again, you know, Chris, we've talked about this before. He does remind me of DeBrickashaw Ferguson, and it takes a minute. You know, he's going against guys that have 3 or 4 years of off-season programs and NFL bodies, and this is a guy that, you know, again, none of these rookies had a chance to be in an off-season program. And as you know, Chris, as a defensive lineman, if you can't anchor and really just settle down against the bull rush, it's really hard because now you're facing an opponent that has every pitch. They can counter, they can speed, they can bull rush you, and you got to be able to foundationally start with a good lower base. So I still think he's going to be a great pick for the next 10 years, but there are growing pains. And I think you can, from a game plan standpoint, you know, Jason Garrett could chip, they could slide protection, you know, they can make things a little bit easier for him so he's not just, you know, growing up in the left-hand lane where, you know, he could drive a little bit slowly, help him, and then, you know, let him progress slowly.
Mike, you can understand how there could be some frustration from Giants fans, though, especially when they see Becton and Wills and Wirfs having the success that they are early on in their careers. Those are offensive tackles that were taken in the top half of the first round, and those guys seem like they're a lot further ahead than Andrew Thomas. Yet Andrew Thomas was the first one to come off the board.
Yep, no, that's totally fair. And, you know, Becton, I thought, was playing really well, obviously, before he got hurt. And we'll see, you know, how it plays out, but that's totally fair. I do, again, I believe in Andrew Thomas. It hasn't clicked just as quickly as I think they hope. And then, you know, you layer on Nate Solder, and I can see why there's frustration. And I think, you know, philosophically, Dave Gettleman had the right idea about offensive linemen. We talked about this, you know, Zeitler and Hernandez, but they're just not playing as well on the road, especially, like, that's where you want your offensive line to really step up, is to take a team on the road, give yourself a chance to win, which they did again on Sunday, but these turnovers will just keep killing the Giants if they don't clean them up.
Mike Tannenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. You talk about the mistakes. You talk about Daniel Jones. You talk about you might put him onto the bench. Are you soured on him? Like, we're a year and five games in, and you don't sound like you're in love with him. Are you soured on the young quarterback for the Giants?
You know, it's interesting. I saw him in college. I saw a lot of the same turnovers, and, you know, it's interesting. You know, we could put Daniel Jones, Mark Sanchez, and Sam Darnold in very similar conversations, which is you want to believe that they're going to grow out of turning the ball over. And I lived it with Mark Sanchez. The good of Mark Sanchez was a guy that we won four playoff games with him, took us to back-to-back championship games. You know, we see Sam Darnold do incredible things, especially with his feet. We've seen Daniel Jones make throws that are really impressive with accuracy and timing. If you don't clean that up, you're going to have a short career. And I think with Daniel Jones, what concerns me, Dave, is we saw it at Duke, and it hasn't gotten better. And again, there's only one quarterback in the NFL right now that has more turnovers. And if we said, hey, you know what, it's a little bit like Justin Herbert. Justin Herbert's made a couple of mistakes, but, you know, by and large, we're seeing really dynamic development. And we're seeing good development with Daniel Jones. But at some point, Dave, you have to say enough is enough.
It's unbelievable how quickly we forget. I mean, Daniel Jones, if he had played a full season last year, would have set the touchdown record for rookies. And now we're in a situation with no offseason, a new system and everything else. We want to hold this kid, you know, his feet to the fire and put him on the bench. I mean, this is 101. Let's just spend the next however many years just drafting quarterbacks in New York and just ruining them, just one by one. We'll draft them in the first round. We'll just keep ruining them. It's unbelievable to me. Mike, last one for me. And I know you hired Adam Gase, so you like Adam Gase. But if Adam Gase relinquishes calling plays, what good is it for me to have Adam Gase as my head coach?
Yeah, I was really preparing for this question, knowing that it was coming today, guys. You know, here's the only other thing I could say is, and look, you know, your record is what your record is, and they haven't won a game, and candidly, they haven't been competitive. At least, you know, we could say the Giants have been. One thing I would say, though, is, look, you can make a change, and you'd feel better for about 10 minutes, but when you look at a guy like Peyton Manning, right, and Peyton Manning's been coached by everybody known to mankind over the course of his career, the best year he ever had was with Adam Gase. He took our team in Miami to the playoffs. You know, that's not hope. That's not speculation. That actually happened. So, again, I know the easy thing is to rip the Band-Aid off and say, hey, it's not working, but I just believe a little, you know, in continuity. And, you know, we've seen other coaches relinquish play calling, and it can make a difference. But, look, it's harder and harder to defend each week. This is obviously, you know, for him going to be personally a big, big week with playing the Dolphins, and, you know, let's see if that makes a difference.
Mike, how do they handle the quarterback situation? Because I know they only scored 10 points against the Cardinals on Sunday, but the offense looked markedly better than it had the previous four games. So Sam is dealing with a little bit of a shoulder. How do you handle that dynamic between Joe Flacco and then going back to Sam?
Yeah, I thought the thing that I liked about Flacco's game, I thought he was really quick decision-making-wise, like ball got out of his hands. And the only other thing you would say is they really haven't been healthy at that skill player position in almost 2 years where they've had a full set of players. So I think you just err on the side of caution, keep playing Flacco, let Sam's shoulder heal slowly. But I agree, Chris. I thought Flacco looked a little bit better than I thought. You know, he had better, you know, tempo to his game. And I just like to see them out there. You know, give me Bell, Perryman, Denzel Mims, Crowder, and then let's see how that looks. Now, you know, I know everyone's dealing with injuries, and it's, you know, it is what it is. But that's the one thing you could say is, like, they've just been decimated at the skill player position.
Mike, is it me, or do you sound vivacious today? Do you sound energized and very uplifted?
Well, I appreciate that, Dave. I do use X2 Performance, which is an all-natural, clean ingredient energy drink that you can go to x2performance.com, and it's something that I use and a lot of professional athletes use. It's a great, healthy alternative to some of these other commercial products, so I would suggest it, and I appreciate you asking.
Absolutely, and I'll continue to ask because it's something I like to know every single week. Mike, beautiful stuff from you. We appreciate you, and I know you're going to be listening closely in a few minutes when the great CC Sabathia joins the show.
Hey guys, I'm making a prediction that next week when we speak, somebody in New York's going to have a win. And I'm not saying it's Rutgers. I just think that this is the week that someone's going to break through here, and we're not going to be sitting here talking about two winless teams. next Tuesday at 10 a.m. That's my bold prediction for the week.
That's easy to say when the Giants play the Washington football team. Stop it, Mike.
Well, come on, I'm looking for something here to build on, right? We got to walk. You know, we got to crawl before we can run, right?
Yeah, you're right.
We'll take anything we can get at this point. Mike, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week. Have a good one.
All right, guys. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. That, of course, is Mike Tenenbaum, who makes the bold prediction that the Giants will beat Washington. The Giants are, a 3.5-point favorite in that game.
Yeah.
Yeah, for your mental health, the Giants need to win that game.
Did you see ESPN's latest power rankings?
Well, the Giants 33rd?
No, do you see what it says about the Jets?
That's what I was saying. Oh, yeah. Rich Samini said the weakness of the Jets
Everything?
Is football.
Yeah, football. Football.
It's football.
Weakness of the Jets is football.
God.
And Rich is so fair.
No, but you killed it. He's done, too. I mean, he's him and Ira, same boat. He's done trying to be nice.
Yeah, but Rich is the most fair. Like, he's not looking for a page click, a page view, people jumping on what he's saying. Like, he's just an honest journalist. And for him to be at the point where he's like, I just can't even believe it anymore. What's wrong with the team? Football's wrong with the team?
Dave, they've turned Rich Samidi into the booth announcer in Major League. That's what they've done. That's what they've done.
It really is. It really is unbelievable. So we'll see. I mean, Jets are 9-point underdogs, so hopefully the Giants find their way to a victory this week. Now, today on ESPN Daily, the Buffalo Bills are 4-0, face the Titans tonight. That game, by the way, definitely will go on. Here's the case for why these Bills could, yes, go all the way. That's on ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. So CeCe Sabathia will join us in just a couple of moments. Could you imagine that, Rick, if the Bills, with their third-year quarterback, Josh Allen, went all the way?
No. No, why would you even do that? I don't understand why you wouldn't say something like that.
Well, I mean, that's the tease for ESPN Daily, the podcast.
Yeah, I don't love it. No, I don't love it. Yeah, I mean, that's not... That's
asking you the question they have in the podcast.
Yeah, I don't appreciate the question. Because, I mean, the reason I know why you asked it. Because you're a bad guy. Because you're all upset that Mike Tannenbaum said that they should bench Daniel Jones.
No, I don't think that's crazy at all, moving on from Daniel Jones. I don't. He looks like he's regressing. And the problem is it him or is it the team is so bad around him? I don't even have the answer for it. It's awful.
Well, it's a new system. I'd say it's probably both. Your offensive line stinks. I mean, I just name it.
But if you go 1-15 and you wind up with the second pick in the draft and you're in love with Fields or Lawrence, do you not take one of those guys?
Yeah, you probably do. But I'd have a hard time believing that Dave Gettleman would be on board with. I mean, the only reason he's going to keep his
Dave
job
Gettleman's
is
not going to be
Daniel
on board
Jones
with anything.
Success.
He will not be on the boat if they wind up at 1-15 or 2-14.
Speaking of boats, it's all went downhill since you were on that boat. That boat picture was the beginning of the end.
That was the end. Forget about the beginning. That was it. Completely.
Well, no,
fell
that was
apart.
The beginning because that picture was taken before you actually played in Green Bay.
Right. I think they're like 4-79 since that boat picture. Oh. Very bad football. All right, let's bring him in. CeCe Sabathia joins us here on 98.7 ESPN. Now, CeCe's teamed up with DraftKings for the MLB postseason. DraftKings is bringing fans closer to all the MLB postseason games. CeCe, we appreciate it. We haven't spoken to you in quite a while. Here's my question for you, and I think about this all the time, because I say this, that the Yankees, and I'll be honest, I think they failed this season, right? For what the expectation was, I think that they certainly came short, and they failed this season. In your mind, knowing the kind of competitor that you are and you were when you played, did the Yankees fail this season by not moving past the ALDS?
I think it's always. I mean, I think that's what you sign up for as a Yankee and as a Yankee fan. I mean, you know, the expectation is to win the World Series every year. So I think, you know, if you ask anybody to a man in that organization or on that team, they would say it was a failure just because we didn't get that parade at the end, and that's always the ultimate goal.
CeCe, I know it's a five-game series. You went to five games. Close game. You know, unfortunately, the Yankees come out as the losers. But, I mean, is it fair to point to game two as where this series shifted?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, you still, like I said, you know, me and Ryan were talking on the podcast. And you know, for, as a player, you know, when, you know, you lose game two or whatever happens, you know, you don't care about any of that. You know, you know you still got games to play. So you're just trying to go out and win one game at a time. You know, we had that series in 2017 when we went down 2-0 in Cleveland, and you know, everybody was freaking out about Joe not making a replay call, and you know, that's just for people on the outside to talk about, for us, you know, the media, for us to talk about and go at. But as a player, you know, you're just trying to win one game at a time, and they still had, you know, it was still in their hands. So You know, I don't think anybody's going to make an excuse and look back and say game two. They still, you know, had a chance to win in game five and just came up short to a really good Rays team that, you know, I was really nervous about playing in the first place. So that's a team, the Rays, that we play all the time. We play them tough every time. They play us tough, you know, no matter whether we're in Tampa or Yankee Stadium. So I knew it was going to be a really close series. And, you know, Brousseau put a really tough at-bat on Chappie and ends up getting a fastball that he can handle after, you know, fouling off some tough pitches, taking some sliders, and put a good swing on it. After his third, you know, it was his third AB in that series off Chappie. So he had seen him a couple times.
CC, the Yankees have embraced analytics, as have most teams around baseball, but do you think it's time for the organization to reconsider how they employ the analytics to their overall philosophy?
I mean, that's not for me to say. You know, I just work there. You know, I'm a it's not for me to say about what they should do with their analytics or anything like
I guess
that.
My question to you is this. Like, we see that analytics over 162 or a regular season works out, but when you get into a short series in the postseason – the game seems a little bit differently. Do you think they need to reconsider, or not even just reconsider, but just think about their approach when it comes to postseason baseball as opposed to regular season baseball?
I think everybody does. I think everybody needs to reconsider their approach. I think, you know, if you look at last year with the Nationals, you know, they had to have the three starters to be able to win. I think when you get to the postseason, you know, you have to have three starters no matter what. You know, you could try to do bullpen days throughout the season and, you know, have openers and all that stuff. And obviously we know that works out. But when you get into the postseason, you have to have three guys that can, you know, at any time in any series can give you six, seven innings. You know, like I said, the Nationals don't win the World Series last year without Anibal Sanchez stepping up and giving them big starts. So, you know, I think everybody needs to reconsider the way they, you know, look at the postseason. And the teams that always win are the teams with the best starters. But that's not necessarily true for the regular season.
CC Sabathia with us here, 98.7 ESPN. So you said Game 2 didn't cause the Yankees to lose the series. But did you have an issue with what they did in Game 2 by taking Garcia out after the one inning and putting Happ in from then on?
Well, I just thought if there's ever a time for you to start a 21-year-old in the playoffs, it would be when there's no fans in the stands. So, you know, I thought maybe we had an advantage there. You know, by getting a chance to let Davey get some playoff experience and pitching a big, you know, playoff series with no fans in the stands. I was just excited to see him go out and get that experience. So, you know, we'll have to wait and see how he pitches in the postseason, you know, in the years coming up. But I thought that would be a great experience for him, you know, kicking off his playoff experience with the Yankees, you know, getting a chance to pitch in a stadium with no fans.
Especially because you won game one. I mean, that's a perfect opportunity. I mean, of all the games, you mentioned you're going to need starters. You play every single day. If you're going to start him in one of these games, game two after a win is the perfect time to do it. CeCe, everyone wants to blame the bats, right? Can't get big hits in big moments. It's a close game. Rays get the hit. But, I mean, can you also point to the fact that, I mean, once we got into the postseason, the amount of or the lack of depth in the bullpen came back to bite you a little bit too?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we always look at our team and our bullpen as always the strength of our team, and then we get into the postseason and it ends up not being the case. So I think, you know, maybe we need to, you know, reconsider how we align our bullpen and, you know, have some guys that we can really rely on, you know, at the end of the game in these postseason games.
See, what are your thoughts on Davey Garcia and how he pitched this year?
I thought he pitched great. You know, I was, like I said, I mean, we know he's very mature. He can handle, you know, pitching in New York. He's got the stuff to do it. You know, so I'm excited to see him going forward, him and Clark Schmidt. You know, Monty pitched great in the postseason. You know, we get Severino back. You know, hopefully Massa, you know, ends up signing back. And then, you got Cole at the top. So I think, you know, going forward, we're set up to you know, have those three starters that I talked about to go into a deep playoff run. We just came a little short this year.
CC Sabathia with us here, 98.7 ESPN on DCR. The Astros, what angers you more about them? The fact that they cheated, got caught, or the fact that even though that happened, they've been like defiant and almost like playing the victim card throughout this whole thing?
I think it's just a no humility about it. You know, obviously we know what happened in 2017. We know they got caught. We know. You know, they got disciplined for it, but they still pretend like, you know, we're making up something. So I think that's the most frustrating part as a fan and as a player that played against them in 17 is that we know that they're a good team And I think that's what was most frustrating about, you know, about them actually cheating in 17 is that we know they're really good. So if they know what's coming and they're a good team, obviously you see what they're doing this year, we have no chance. So I think that was the biggest thing I think, you know, people were trying to – or I was trying to convey, and I think people were, you know, still upset about.
Yeah, and relax. You beat the Twins, too. Everyone beats the Twins. CC Sabathia joins us here on the show. CC, last one from me. How much do you think – Gary Sanchez, we saw what he's capable of doing offensively. When he's right, he's the best offensive catcher in Major League Baseball. How much did them being so focused on changing him defensively, how much do you think that played into his struggles offensively this season?
You know what? I don't know. Obviously, I wasn't around as much this year because of COVID and, you know, not wanting to get the team sick. But, it was weird. I thought this year for sure he would come back and, you know, bounce back offensively. You know, for me, I threw to Gary a lot, and I had no problem with it. You know, he works hard, and I've said this a million times. If he was a guy that didn't work hard and didn't work at catching and didn't really care about catching, then I feel like it was valid points to get on him. But he works so hard, and he wants to be a great catcher, and he cares a lot. So, I mean, as a teammate, all you can do is just support him, and hopefully he goes out and turns it around. Obviously, offensively, we know he's one of the best hitters in the league. You know, it's just, you know, going to take for him to unlock and, you know, the right side of the field for me again to get him back to where he was in 2016 and 17.
CC, so for so much of the season, we thought that it was a foregone conclusion, you know, fans, people in the media, that the Dodgers would represent the National League in the World Series, but they dropped game one of the CS to the Braves. I mean, what do the Braves have happen in order to get out of this series and actually beat the Dodgers on their way to the World Series?
They just got to keep pitching well. You know, their starting pitching has stepped up huge, and that's something that was a problem for them, having all those guys go down so early in the season. And these guys have really stepped up and pitched well. And if they can keep that up with this Dodger team, which seems unlikely to me just because the Dodgers have so much firepower and they're so deep, they'll be able to win that series. But just for me, the Dodgers are so deep and, you know, their pitching staff is so deep that I think it's going to be tough for them to come out of that series with a win.
Now, CeCe, you're a Raiders fan, aren't you?
I am, yeah.
I mean, you must be on cloud nine after that performance this weekend.
It was. I mean, we just so up and down, you know what I mean? Like, I'm excited, but our schedule's so tough, and we play so up and down. But, you know, we haven't beat Kansas City since I was probably a senior in high school, which is 20 years ago. So it was exciting to watch them actually pull off a win in Kansas City.
Yeah, what was your reaction to the Dak Prescott injury?
Oh man, that was horrible to watch, man. It was just, you know, it was obviously a nasty injury, but then just thinking about all the things he's been through the last 2 years, you know, trying to get paid, it just sucks, man. Everything being so public and, you know, him going back and forth in the contract negotiations, and this is always the last thing you think about, him, you know, having a serious injury like this. So, you know, to watch that on Sunday was tough, man. As an athlete and as a fan.
Who's going to win the World Series of these four?
You know, I think it may be the Rays and the Dodgers. And to be honest, out of those two teams, either one of them could win it. But, I'll go Dodgers.
Because you can't go Rays, right? I mean, that's your rival.
Me, personally, I can't go Rays. So yeah. I have to go Dodgers.
You have to go Dodgers. All right. CC, listen, we appreciate it. Don't be a stranger. I mean, let's chat every now and then, especially if you're Rays.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm retired now. I got nothing to do, so it's all good.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you, man. Enjoy the postseason. Enjoy the Raiders.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
All right. Good stuff. That, of course, CC Sabathia joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. I want to remind you, you can listen to us anywhere. Just click listen live at ESPNNewYork.com. Find 98.7 ESPN on the ESPN app or the TuneIn app, or simply tell your smart speaker, play 98.7 ESPN. At 98.7 ESPN New York, we go where you go. You agree with that, can't you, right? You, anybody but the American League? Braves or Dodgers you'll be rooting for in the World Series?
No, it's anybody but the Astros for me, Dave. Anybody but the Astros.
So you're actively rooting for the Rays right now.
As much as I dislike the Rays because they're a rival, like there is a lack of overall respect for the Astros. Like, I want all the bad things in baseball to happen to the Astros and nobody else.
So the worst thing for you would be Houston winning the World Series this year?
I think that's the worst thing for everybody that loves baseball, yes.
Well, fortunately for you, doesn't look like that's going to happen.
No, the Rays are up 2-0.
Yeah, Razor's better, I think.
It would be nice if the Rays could get the sweep, though. It'd be nice.
I think it's possible.
Just to completely sweep.
How about the catch that Margot made yesterday?
Oh my God.
Unbelievable.
Did you hear, though? I felt bad for Lauren Chahadi. Did you hear when she asked him?
No, I didn't see. I didn't hear.
She said, you know, you've played a lot of right field here. And did that help out? And he's like, I never played right field here before.
Never played right field.
No, never have I played right field here before.
I used to make, dude, I'm telling you, that catch is like, if I were to pick a way, and it, usually it's robbing a home run, but to make a catch where and that you flip over the wall like that was always like, always my ultimate. Like, I always wanted to make a catch like that.
But you're completely exposed, dude. Like, you're he can't brace himself when he's falling over the fence.
No.
Dude, that, like to, that, you know what I'm saying?
My dream was growing up in Boston. You know where the bullpen is?
Yeah.
Is me running full speed at Fenway. And then as the ball is going over the fence, I leap because it's a short fence. And I catch it as I'm diving over the fence. I used to make my dad throw baseballs to me, like the hedges in front of our house.
Up against the wall. Everybody did.
No, it wasn't against the wall. It was the hedges. And then I would dive over the hedges and catch it.
For us, it was in front of the garage with the gutter hanging down.
Oh, it's the best.
Yeah, of course. That's every kid's dream, to catch it over the wall. Lakers win championship. I mean, just a terrific job by LeBron and the whole bubble, and all that was really, really well done. You mentioned earlier, Rick, you wanted to hear what LeBron had to say after the game. Here's a little snippet of LeBron after winning another title and another Finals MVP.
We just want our respect. Rob wants his respect. Coach Vogel wants his respect. Our organization wants their respect. Laker Nation wants their respect. And I want my damn respect, too.
Do you think there are those people that don't give the Lakers or LeBron or anybody respect? I think they all get respect, no?
Yeah, I don't know who he's speaking to. I mean, I know I respect the hell out of LeBron James. And the people that pretend like they don't respect LeBron James are only doing it because they're trying to create conversation.
A hot take. Yeah, you want to make a hot take. Yeah.
That's how they pay their bill. That's how they keep their jobs, is to make that a conversation.
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous to disrespect LeBron James. He's one of the two greatest players to have ever played in the NBA. Who have ever played a game of basketball. Let's just call it what it is. Like, to be disrespectful to him about his legacy and all his championships and all of that stuff, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, I get that there are some people that are fiercely loyal to Michael Jordan and everything that he did, but I don't think you have to tear down LeBron James to celebrate how great Michael Jordan is.
One of these guys, and I don't want to give him the time of day by mentioning the name, one of these, we'll call him, for lack of a better term, shock jock sports radio guys, had a tweet this week, and I guess a conversation on his show. If LeBron wins a championship, does it detract from his legacy this year?
That's absolutely ridiculous. How does that take away from his legacy?
It's ridiculous.
How does winning a title, it's a pandemic.
Yeah, but because just listen to what you just read. It's so stupid that you're going to have to tune in to hear what he has to say, because it's so ridiculous.
I did not. It is moronic. But I think everyone that is of any sound mind has the ultimate respect for LeBron and the Lakers.
The only person that people don't respect in LeBron's little speech is Rob Pelinka. Like, I'm a Lakers fan. I still don't have a lot of respect for Rob Pelinka, just how he did Magic Johnson.
Yeah.
Rob Pelinka still seems a little greasy to me.
Cable Rob Lowe. That's who he is.
You know what? He helped you in another championship. Congratulations.
I don't think that was Rob Lowe. I think that's LeBron and Clutch Sports.
DCR is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Catch them weekday mornings at 9 on 98.7 ESPN.